WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross.
Well, let's talk about killing it. We know it's using the air shafts. Will you listen to me, Parker? Shut up!
Let's hear it.
It's using the air shafts.
We don't know that.
That's the only way. We'll move in pairs. We'll go step by step and cut off every bulkhead and every vent until we have it cornered, and then we'll blow it the f*** out into space. Is that acceptable to you?
That's Sigourney Weaver in a scene from the 1979 film Alien. Alien made Sigourney Weaver a star and established her as one of the few women action heroes of the time. She received an Academy Award nomination for her role in the sequel, Aliens. She also starred in The Year of Living Dangerously, Working Girl, Gorillas in the Mist, Death and the Maiden, Copycat, and The Ice Storm. Now you can see Sigourney Weaver in two films, the comedy Galaxy Quest and the movie adaptation of Jane Hamilton's novel, A Map of the World. In A Map of the World, Weaver plays Alice Goodwin, a school nurse and mother of two young girls. She and her husband have recently moved from the city to a farming community where they're seen as outsiders. Early in the film, Alice is at home taking care of her children and watching her best friend's two daughters. While Alice runs upstairs for a minute, her friend's two-year-old wanders outside and drowns in the pond. Overwhelmed by guilt and grief, Alice falls apart and loses all faith in herself. Others lose faith in her, too. In this scene, two investigators approach her at the school where she works as a nurse and question her about a boy she's taken care of. What the investigators can't tell her is that the boy has accused her of sexual abuse.
You have a relationship with Robbie?
Oh.
What's funny?
Kids are usually afraid of the school nurse.
Afraid?
Yeah, I'm a tall person who carries a needle. You know, I have to go.
Oh, just a few questions, please, Mrs. Goodwin. The more we know about Robbie, the better we can assist him.
What sort of trouble is he in now?
We're not able to comment, I'm afraid. We wondered if you remember any strange behavioral patterns.
Oh, well, his crazy mother always brings him to school sick.
What kind of sickness did he have?
Oh, God, I mean, you know, sore throats, ear infections, you know, the common cold, you know, you name it. I have to go.
Are you okay?
I'm not well.
I'm sorry to keep you standing. Why don't we sit? This really won't take much longer.
You see, I'm sick, and I really can't.
We just have a few more things to ask.
You want to know the truth? I am trying to have a complete nervous breakdown, and no one will let me do it in peace.
What's the matter? Mrs. Goodwin? Mrs. Goodwin?
I hurt everybody!
Sigourney Weaver, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Did you talk to Jane Hamilton, the author of the novel that the movie's based on?
I did. I visited Jane before we shot the movie. I went to her apple farm in Wisconsin, and it was a great visit. I took my daughter, and I was also able to visit a couple of the schools and talk to the school nurses and talk to some dairy farmers and their wives. And also, I went to the local county jail, and I asked them to book me and put me through what Alice Goodwin would actually have to go through once she was arrested.
Why did you want to go through that? You know, some people say that it's best to experience what the character does, and others say, oh, you just act.
Well, I think that acting comes from specifics, and since I've never been booked so far on charges, I thought it's one thing to be arrested for something you didn't do, but it's another thing to actually be put through the process with people treating you like a sexual molester of children. And I thought since you never see her having her fingerprints taken or any of those things, you just see her at the jail, that I wanted to experience what, because I think you would go into shock if you were got up with your family, were on the way to the grocery store with your kids, and you were arrested for something you didn't do. It would all be so incredibly surreal, but I wanted the details.
So what were some of the details you got out of that? What did they do to you?
Well, first of all, you sit for a while and you're handcuffed to something while they take down your personal information. And as the guy said, who very kindly gave me sort of the personal tour, he said, you know, if you're arrested for a charge like this, people aren't going to like you very much. So unfortunately, that even if you're falsely arrested, there people already sort of shun you. It's like the accusation is evidence enough. And then just to have my fingerprints taken, they now do it on computer. It's not like you just push your fingers into an ink pad. You have to keep pressing down. It took me at least a half an hour before they could get 10 decent fingerprints, which is a very, you feel so impotent already, and then not even be able to do the simplest thing is very unnerving, you know, and adds to the sort of shock of the whole experience. And then I went through, you know, where you give up your own clothes, and I was introduced to my cell and the other inmates who were very generous in talking to me about the experience of being in jail when they had children, et cetera. And so it was a very useful day for me.
You're very very beleaguered and very vulnerable in this movie. You've made four Alien films in which you're really tough. How do you use your body differently for vulnerable than for tough?
Well, it's funny, but I consider the role of Ripley, which I played in the Alien movies, that she's also a very vulnerable person. It's just she has no one else to turn to, so that she has to also be tough. So I don't think it's any different. To me, there might be more opportunities in which you see Alice feeling at a great disadvantage. Her life is not being threatened as Ripley's is. So I think in that case, that you know, you see her in a more relaxed way. But I think, to me, the great thing about acting, one of them, is that the body is not sophisticated. The body doesn't really understand acting. So if you're prepared, you know, if you've done your homework, you get in the scene, the cameras, you know, they say action, and you're saying these words, and you've done your preparation, the body doesn't realize that you're not talking about a child that didn't really die. You know, the body, it doesn't know that the jail is sort of temporary. So your body's reacting to all these things. I think it's very important for the actor to be very relaxed and deal with whatever the reality is of the scene. In other words, to try to keep your head out of it and just let yourself honestly respond as a human being to what's going on in the scene, what's being said.
Your character in A Map of the World is someone who doesn't pay a whole lot of attention to her hair or to her clothes. She's kind of haphazardly dressed, hardly fashionable. Compare how you have to dress in A Map of the World to how you're dressed in Galaxy Quest, the other current movie that you're in.
Yeah, it's sort of the other end of the spectrum there. My cat suit in Galaxy Quest had very...
we should say here that you play an actress in a Star Trek kind of show.
Right. I play a character named Gwen DeMarco, who plays Tawny Madison, Lieutenant Tawny Madison, on Galaxy Quest, the TV series. And Tawny is a sort of 70s-looking babe who wears a tight suit, a lot of cleavage, long blonde hair, a lot of makeup, and it wasn't the most comfortable costume. You're much more exposed, and but it was a hoot to do something that was so opposite to A Map of the World.
Well, what does it do to you to be in clothes like that? The long blonde wig, showing lots of cleavage, babe clothes.
Well, I've gotten in trouble for saying it, but when I put the costume on, I really lost. And I think this is my reaction to the costume. It's not any kind of generalization about blondes who were built, but I found myself coming much more from the actress who's been treated like a sex object. I felt that I had much less confidence in what I had to offer on the set. And sometimes I would say very naive and gullible things, and my director would say, like one day he said, Sigourney, can you say that line as you're moving? And I had worked out that Gwen was a former Vegas showgirl, so I was much more confident walking than talking my lines. And when he said I had to walk and talk at the same time, I said, gosh, Dean, I'm sorry, but I just don't think that will work as well. He said, Sigourney, are you listening to yourself? And I sort of stopped and I thought, oh, thank goodness I only have a month more of filmmaking, because I really felt like, and also I play a character who's been rejected by Tim Allen's character romantically for about 20 years. He won't make a commitment. I don't think that's very good for a woman's confidence either. So it was really playing the dumb blonde made me feel kind of like a dumb blonde.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Sigourney Weaver, and she's starring in the new movie, A Map of the World. She also co-stars in Galaxy Quest. Your mother was an actress. What stage name did she use?
She used the name Elizabeth Inglis, I-N-G-L-I-S, in England. And she was in, actually, she's has a small role in The Letter with Betty Davis, and she's also, very briefly, in Hitchcock's The 39 Steps. Then she made a couple of American movies under the name Elizabeth Earle, because I guess Inglis was too highfalutin for them, which was my grandmother's maiden name. So she was Elizabeth Earle. Those movies I have not seen.
And did you want to do that too, be an actress, from seeing your mother, or was it unrelated?
You know, my father was in, ran NBC in the 50s. So he used to come home from work laughing a lot, and I just got the sense that he was having a great deal of fun with his career. My mother had by then given up acting and had never really talked about it. So I think I came into acting really because I tried to avoid it, frankly. I didn't think I'd be any good at it at all, and I didn't feel I'd be able to live up to whatever my parents had done. So I kind of backed into it. I kept doing it, and I even went to drama school where they told me I had no talent. But my friends kept hiring me for their new plays, and suddenly I was working more than anyone else I knew.
No, you mentioned your father, Pat Weaver, who was the head of NBC. He also created The Today Show and The Tonight Show. Did
yes,
you spend a lot of time in TV studios when you were young?
You know, I didn't really. I did visit him at Rockefeller Center. I remember J. Fred Muggs was this little chimp on The Today Show with Dave Garraway, and J. Fred grabbed my hat and ran away with it, and I never got it back. Probably it was in shreds, but I remember not liking that very much. He was about my size, too, so that left a negative impression.
I'm just thinking this was great practice for gorillas in the mist.
There you go. I could have been severely traumatized by this first incident with an ape. But I remember him taking me to see Mary Martin in rehearsal for the first televised production of Peter Pan. And it was so exciting to meet her and see her fly. And I also met Captain Hook, and I saw the crocodile. And that impressed me. But again, I was terribly shy. And I think I would never have dreamed that I would feel comfortable in that world, because I was kind of a very late bloomer.
Since he created The Today Show and The Tonight Show, do you always feel when you're on a talk show, you should really be a good guest? Because he knew the importance of good guests.
You know, it gives me a kind of secret pleasure when I'm on, the Today Show or the Tonight Show. I kind of look around and what I feel is, gosh, look at all the jobs Daddy created. That's sort of the way I look at it. I just think it's good for the industry, and it makes me very proud, obviously, because when he created these two shows, no one believed that when he said people will want to watch TV at those hours, they never believed him for a second. He really had to push.
My guest is Sigourney Weaver. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. Sigourney Weaver is my guest. She's starring in A Map of the World. You can also see her in Galaxy Quest. You went to Yale School of Drama, I think at the same time as Meryl Streep, Wendy Wasserstein. Who else?
Christopher Durang, Albert Inarritu, Francis Lee Beatty, William Ivy Long, who's these are also costume and set designers. I guess those are the most famous people.
Did you work with any of them after college?
After drama school, I did a lot of Chris Durang's work, and I was on Gemini, in Gemini on off Broadway.
That's an Albert Inarritu.
Yeah. Right. And I, you know, luckily the good thing about Yale for me was we did a lot of new plays there all the time. And I think it really helped me learn how to read a script. And it made all of us quite daring, I think, as actors. You know, there certainly is not a second where I worry about making a fool of myself because I just assume I will. And that's fine. You know, I think that's just part of the work. I feel extremely fortunate to have spent my early years doing playwrights like Durang and Inarritu and Wasserstein, John Guare, Len Jenkin. You know, I just feel that was such a wonderful part of my life, you know.
Now, I think that there was a year maybe before you established yourself as an actress that you modeled.
Actually, it was a summer.
Even shorter than a year, okay.
I didn't want to do it much after that. I did it when I was, I think, 17. I was the Love Cosmetics body girl. And I did it for a summer. And then when I was at Stanford, I was about to take exams. They asked me to come back and do another ad campaign. I said, are you crazy? I'm about to take exams. And, you know, it never really interested me, modeling. And I also thought at that point, especially, it was a very short career. I thought, if I'm going to, you know, stick my neck out, I want to continue doing whatever it is till I'm like 85, you know.
You're very tall, I think nearly 6 feet.
Mm-hmm.
I'm interested in how height affected you in terms of casting, and also how it affected you before you started acting, just when you were growing up and you kept getting taller than the other girls. Let's start with, you know, you personally when you were a girl. Some girls who get really tall start to try to shrink themselves by hunching over, lowering their head and putting it forwards, just so that they decrease their height a little bit. Did you go through a stage like that?
Well, when I was 11, I was as tall as I am now, which
wow.
meant I really, yeah. I was like a behemoth. And I grew so quickly, I really hadn't caught up to myself. So I was also quite clumsy by mistake, which was mortifying. But, you know, my mother's quite short, and she would always say, God, I'd love to be tall like you. She always said, you may not be happy now, but you'll be happy later. And I guess I trusted her, but I certainly was a class clown always because of my height, because I wanted to make fun of myself before someone else could. And I took a lot of modern dance in high school. First, they put me on the basketball team, you know, and I was a huge disappointment. And I was like watching the spider try to, you know, go down the court. And so I took a lot of modern dance, which I loved, and I loved choreography. But I also, you know, it did keep me actually from getting a number of roles. I remember being fired once because they had to replace my boyfriend with a much shorter actor. I got fired because I was too tall. And I remember thinking, this is good in a way, because the conventional people won't hire me because I'm too tall. It'll be the crazy people who don't think in conventional ways that want to see me as part of a romantic couple or whatever. And it's a great litmus test. And I may have lost out on a lot of roles. You know, I haven't played a lot of girlfriends and stuff, but I think I've been very lucky in what it did bring me. And, you know, people like Ridley Scott, who cast me in Alien, which was basically my first film, they're not conventional thinkers. And I think I've been so extraordinarily lucky to work with the directors I've worked with, because they didn't think like everyone else thinks.
Did you ever work opposite an actor where he had to wear platform shoes, or you had to bend in order to be the same size?
Well, Mel Gibson is about 5'9", I guess, and so I'm a little taller than he is. But he is such a secure guy that it was never a problem for him at all. We did have one scene where he had to have little lifts in his shoes. But Peter Weir, who's our director, never said, Sigourney, you know, you're really looking tall. Can you shrink a little? So I never did that. You know, I always had good posture. I don't know why. I don't know why I wasn't trying to hide. But there you have it. I think maybe the dance gave me good dance. All the dance I did gave me good posture. But I have worked with much taller men who are much less secure about their height, my height. They're more insecure about my height. I won't mention any names, but it's very revealing, actually.
How are those insecurities expressed, you know, without naming names or betraying anybody?
Well, just does she have to wear high heels? Can't we sit down? There was one play I did where the actor obviously read a review that said that he was much shorter than I was in a certain scene. And every time I came near him that night, he sat down, which really screwed up our blocking and infuriated me, because I think if you're going to take reviews that seriously, you shouldn't read them. Because it's very hard for us to play all these love scenes with him sitting down and me standing up. So it's interesting. It's interesting how people react to it. I certainly don't think I'm intimidating as a person. You know, I'm pretty easygoing, and yet because I do wear high heels, and when I wear high heels, I'm taller than my own husband, who's almost the same height as I am. But, you know, it's, as he would say, no big hoo-hoo.
Sigourney Weaver will be back in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Sigourney Weaver. She's starring in the new movies A Map of the World and Galaxy Quest. She made her film debut with a very small part as Woody Allen's date at the end of his film Annie Hall. It was her first starring role in the Ridley Scott film Alien that made her famous. Well, your first starring role was in Alien. Did you ever think you'd play an action hero?
I don't know. Did we even have action heroes then? Maybe Douglas Fairbanks or someone like that. No, I never did, and I still can't. That's still not really the way I look at her.
Tell me how you look at her.
First of all, I think the producers were very savvy, and they thought it would be cool if, you know, instead of the man turning out to be the hero, it would be a great surprise to the audience if the young woman turns out to be the survivor. So it was just sort of, you know, they didn't do it for any kind of political reasons, feminist reasons or anything. They just thought it would make sense for the story. I guess I sort of always saw Ripley as my breeches part. A breeches part in Shakespeare, for instance, is what Gwyneth Paltrow played in Shakespeare in Love. It's when you get to play Viola in Twelfth Night or whatever, when you are disguised as a boy. And to me, Ripley was my chance to play like Henry V, to play the male role in battle. But I always saw it, I thought of it in very classical terms, the sort of woman warrior. And what I think is interesting is that people always say you've played these tough women, when in fact, I think women traditionally have had to be very tough, because often the men are away fighting wars or hunting. The women have had to protect the hearth and home and their children, and they've had to, you know, rely on themselves and their wits and whatever they can bring to hand to defend themselves. And there's no time for sort of sentimentality or, you know, fragility, because there's too much at stake. So that's sort of how I see it.
How did you get the part in Alien? It certainly wasn't as a result of your performance as Woody Allen's date at the end of Annie Hall.
No, I'm afraid not. Actually, I was on apparently a short list of classically trained actresses that they wanted to see. And I remember I went to the wrong place. They gave me the wrong address, and I showed up there. It was the wrong place. I called my agents. I went, you know, I'm a little tired. Because I didn't really, you know, to be in a science fiction film for me was not, I mean, I always enjoyed them, but I wanted to work with New York directors, you know, Arthur Penn and Mike Nichols and stuff like that. So I almost didn't go to the interview. Then when I went to the interview, I met Ridley Scott, and he showed me all of Giger's designs, because the artist, Swiss artist Giger, was designing all the sets, and to a large degree, the alien eggs, and Carlo Rambaldi had done the alien, and my jaw must have just dropped to the floor, because I knew I'd never seen this kind of imagery in a movie, ever. And really, when Ridley and I were starting to talk about the script, I was somewhat critical of the script because I'd been an English major at Stanford. I didn't understand that you were supposed to act like, you know, meek and polite. And I just thought, well, if we're going to talk about the work, let's talk about it. And you see, that worked for Ridley because he's a very honest person. I remember the casting agent sort of giving me like looks like, will you please try? You know, you haven't gotten the job yet, you know, was the look she was giving me. But I always felt that it was better to put your cards on the table. And I think that helped me get the part of Ripley, because Ridley wanted that kind of confidence, I guess,
in that part. We'll show an example of confidence. This is from the second Alien film for which you were nominated for a Best Actress Academy Award. And in this scene, you've just discovered that the man who hired you, played by Paul Reiser, is trying to transport two of the alien species back to Earth for his company. So here's that scene.
Look, those two specimens are worth millions to the bioweapons division, right? Now, if you're smart, we can both come out of this heroes, and we will be set up for life.
You're crazy, Bert. Do you know that? Do you really think you can get a dangerous organism like that past ICC quarantine?
How can they impound it if they don't know about it?
But they will know about it, Burke. For me. Just like they'll know that you were responsible for the deaths of 157 colonists.
Wait a second.
You sent them to that ship.
You're wrong.
I just checked the colony log. Directive dated 6-12-79, signed Burke, Carter J. You sent them out there and you didn't even warn them. Why didn't you warn them, Burke?
Okay, look. What if that ship didn't even exist? Did you ever think about that? I didn't know. So now if I went and made a major security situation out of it, everybody steps in, administration steps in, and there's no exclusive rights for anybody. Nobody wins. So I made a decision, and it was wrong. It was a bad call, Ripley. It was a bad call.
Bad call?
Right.
These people are dead, Burke! Don't you have any idea what you've done here? Well, I'm gonna make sure that they nail you right to the wall for this. You're not gonna sleaze your way out of this one. Right to the wall.
My guest, Sigourney Weaver, with Paul Reiser. Well, you got to throw Paul Reiser against the wall.
I did. This is great. It's like listening to an old prison movie, you know, on the radio.
Are there things you had to learn to do for the Alien films that a lot of men have to do all the time in films that you didn't expect you'd have to do? You know, shoot guns, talk tough, fight.
You know, I did have to do all that. Again, I was thinking of it in this great tradition of being able to play some of these parts that women traditionally don't get to play. So I've always been a gun control supporter. So I was quite horrified. I was very busy the year I did Aliens. And I think I skipped some bunch of stage directions that were all about guns. Because when the day came and Jim Cameron showed me what I had to do, I said, I don't remember this being in the script. I don't remember having to do all this with guns. And I realize now that if you're working really hard, you tend to kind of flip through a story, trying to get the story, and maybe you'll miss a few details. And so I had to overcome some moral objections. But I have to say that I totally enjoyed all the rehearsals I had, where I had to, I had a gun which had flamethrowers in it and a sort of a bazooka, and it also shot, it was a machine gun, did all three things. And there would be long takes where I had to make sure that I inflamed the dummies and shot blanks at the stuntmen and did the bazooka thing toward the right place. And it's amazing to me, because we'd shoot like a 10-minute take, I certainly always got it right, but they certainly trusted me with these very powerful guns. God forbid I should have made a mistake ever. But they were very, it's an amazing thing to have a flamethrower, which I've used quite a lot now, never in real life.
Did you have to pump up for the film?
You always had to be in good shape just to do a movie. I think most people don't realize how much stamina it takes to be an actor, to shoot those long hours day in, day out for several months. You have to be in pretty good shape. It's like to be in athletic shape. And these things I had to do, some of them, for instance, Alien Resurrection, which is the last one we did, because I'm part alien creature, I wanted to be extremely lithe and extremely strong. And I really did train hard for that particular part because I didn't want to have to do anything. I wanted to emanate that kind of, you know, superhuman strength. and the training. I did mostly karate, and it helped me enormously, even mentally, to play the character.
So do you feel like you emerged from the Alien films stronger mentally and physically than you otherwise would have been?
I'm not sure I'm any stronger mentally. I think I've done some things I wouldn't normally have done.
I guess, like, when I said mentally, I meant, you know, to think of yourself as being stronger, to have a stronger self-image.
You know, there was something I had to do on Alien Resurrection, which was I had to swim underground, underwater in these subterranean kitchens and everything. You couldn't come up for air. You had no mask and you had no air, and you couldn't see anything. And I'm quite claustrophobic, and the only way I could do the scenes was to only do them as Ripley. Ripley does not have a big imagination. She does not waste time thinking of what could happen to her. She just does it. She's kind of like one of those pilots, you know, who has the right stuff, and when the jet plane is going in spirals down, they're thinking, all right, now I need to try A. That didn't work. Now I need to try B. And I think I'm much more neurotic. So if I want to be less neurotic, I can pretend to be Ripley.
My guest is Sigourney Weaver. She's starring in two new films, A Map of the World and Galaxy Quest. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Sigourney Weaver. Let me get to a performance very unlike Ripley, and this was your performance in Working Girl, for which I think you were also nominated for an Academy Award.
Mm-hmm.
And you played Catherine Parker, a corporate executive, and Melanie Griffith played the secretary who comes to work for you. And this is a very funny scene. This is a scene in which you're preparing for a ski vacation in Germany, and Melanie Griffith is helping you try on your ski boots and helping you prepare, and you're talking to her about this upcoming vacation.
I called the inn. They said all they can give you is a ground floor single in the new wing.
Did you tell them it was me?
Well, I said Parker.
Helmut, hier ist Catherine Parker. Wunderschön, danke. Und Sie? Wie ist der Rücken?
Gut. Und Marlena? Fabelhaft. Hören Sie, ist es möglich, das 314 zu bekommen?
Vielen, vielen Dank. Sie sind mein Süßer.
Gut. Bis heute Abend dann. Also.
Ciao. It's this tower room with a canopy bed and a fireplace big enough to stand in. Perfect. Everything's in place.
For what?
Man I've been seeing for a while. I think he's it. And I think this could be the weekend we decide. He said there was something very important he wanted to discuss with me. I think he's gonna pop the question.
You do?
I think so. We're in the same city now. I've indicated that I'm receptive to an offer. I've cleared the month of June, and I am, after all, me.
Well, what if he doesn't pop the question?
I really don't think that's a variable.
Sigourney Weaver, that's a very funny scene. Was that all real German? I mean, is Fabelhaft a real word?
Well, you know, Mike Nichols directed the film. He's such a wonderful director, and I, of course, didn't speak a word of German, and so he taped it for me. And I think it is all German, but I think, like, Fabelhaft might be, you know, the equivalent of the German Sloan Ranger way of talking, you know, the sort of, you know, kind of slight, you know, the slang of the very rich or something. It's a very funny scene. It makes me want to see the movie again.
Now, your timing in that scene is very good. Have you played, did you play a lot of comedies early in your career?
You know, comedy is what I was always extremely comfortable in. You know, I think, I don't know why, but I was always good at making people laugh. It's actually been strange for me to play so many serious roles or to be considered an actress who, I don't know, in some of my films, you might have said my characters were humorless. I always try to find the humor because I think people use humor to cope. So that's been odd, but I always was much more confident in comedies.
Sigourney Weaver is my guest. You can see her in two new films, A Map of the World and Galaxy Quest. Let me move on to another movie, also made in 1988, the same year as Working Girl. And this is Gorillas in the Mist, in which you played Diane Fossey, who was a real-life expert in primates, and she studied the mountain gorillas in the Virunga Mountains at the preserve there. And she tried to protect them from poachers. And in this scene, you're trying to explain to the interior minister that the gorillas are being killed and you need help.
They were murdered by poachers. The gorilla population now is half what it was 10 years ago.
Your problem is decreasing gorillas. Mine is increasing people. We're on opposite sides of the same problem.
Can I have this water?
Sure. That kind of money provides people with food, clothing, shoes, medicine. Necessities. Do you want to compare priorities, Miss Fossey?
No, I don't. The Virungas are supposed to be protected parks land. Where's the protection?
Protection is expensive.
That's your problem. Make new laws, raise taxes, but give my gorillas the protection they're entitled to.
Your gorillas. As I recall, Miss Fossey, you're a visitor on a yearly renewable work permit. Now, I don't believe that status entitles you to make government policy.
You know, some of the people who work with the real Diane Fossey felt that she was really too obsessed for her own good, that she got too emotionally involved with the gorillas. Did you have to just, like, figure out where you stood on that before you played her?
Well, I didn't really, because I was quite ignorant of the situation before I played her. And what was interesting trying to research Diane was that everyone said something different about her. There were people who loved her so much and followed her, and there were other people who completely dismissed her since she did not have a degree. And she was really in there somewhere, so it was quite important that I concentrate on the truth of each scene. I would say that I work for the Diane Fossey Gorilla Fund. I'm on the board. And since Diane's death, it was clear to us even then, I guess, that the welfare of the gorillas had to be, in a sense, embraced by the Rwandan people because they're in each other's country. And since then, I'm happy to say that a whole community of Rwandan families has grown, out of which come all the rangers who watch over the gorillas and protect them. And there's a huge commitment in this community to take care of the gorillas. And I think that it was a mistake for Diane to think of the gorillas versus the humans. But at that time, I didn't really want to see it any other way. I only wanted to play it from Diane's point of view, as twisted as it might have been. She believed in it wholeheartedly. And if you spend a lot of time with the gorillas, you can begin to imagine that for her, they were her family, and they were being, you know, killed just for their hands. And I think she had a very visceral, unscientific, maternal reaction about this.
It must be kind of odd in a way when your real self and a character that you play come together. You know, you play Diane Fossey and now you work with the Diane Fossey Fund. And in some way, you know, you have the responsibility for helping that group carry on their work. Is that a coming together that you welcome, or that sometimes makes you uncomfortable? You know, it's just a role, and now I'm not playing it anymore.
Well, you know, for me, the time I spent with gorillas, which was on and off for about 3 months, I mean, really like 3 or 4 visits a week over several months, I felt it was like a huge gift I was given by Diane and by the gorillas to have spent so much time with them. And I felt I was in a unique position as a celebrity in the world to tell people about the experience of being with the mountain gorillas and how much there is to learn from them and how important it is for us to ensure their survival. And also, Diane taught me something very profound. She truly believed that animals and humans have equal rights, that there's no reason at all for man to think, I am the superior one, therefore I will take the land and build my cities, and the hell with the animals. That simply kind of disappeared from my philosophy in terms of conservation.
My guest is Sigourney Weaver. We'll be back after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Sigourney Weaver. She's in two new movies, Galaxy Quest and A Map of the World.
I'm going to squeeze in one more movie scene. And okay. this is from your 1995 film, Copycat. And you played Helen Hudson, who was an expert on serial killers, who ended up going into seclusion after being terrorized by a serial killer, played by the singer Harry Connick, who right. ended up being caught and imprisoned. And in this scene, two police officers, played by Holly Hunter and Dermot Mulroney, are trying to get you to help them with a new serial murder.
I talked to you this morning, Dr. Hudson. Do you remember?
Of course I remember. There's nothing wrong with my memory. You called me a crank.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, I suppose I am. I got a couple of crank calls myself. That's why I thought Daryl Lee Cullen must have gotten out of prison.
Ma'am, if Daryl Lee had gotten out, I assure you, you'd be the first to know.
Well, good. I'm relieved.
I hate to sound like a broken record, but you called us, Dr. Hudson?
Yes. I did. I'm sorry it won't happen again.
You mind telling us why?
There's a serial killer out there who strangled three women. He's going to do it again.
Even if there's a chain of evidence connecting these murders, nothing's been reported in the press. How do you connect them?
I don't know. 20 years of clinical experience and having serial killers on the brain.
Would you work with us on this?
You're kidding, right?
No, ma'am.
I thought you knew that I don't do this anymore. I'm retired.
Is that why you called our office 14 times? Because you're retired? Come on, help me out here. I really admire your work.
Does she do this wide-eyed little girl routine often?
Yeah.
Does it work?
Usually.
Sometimes.
You can spare me the bullshit, Inspector. You don't admire me. You don't even like me. None of your people do. But the beautiful part is I don't give a fuck. That's the upside of having a nervous breakdown. So
Sigourney Weaver, I think one of the things that's really interesting about this movie is, the female energy in it. The two leads are, you know, you, an expert in serial killers, and Holly Hunter, who's this, you know, tough cop. And it was really nice to see that in a movie, two really mm-hmm. strong, dynamic and different women leads.
It was great. You know, it doesn't happen enough. Our characters were so opposite. I think actually Copycat is one of the best movies I've ever been in. Unfortunately, we came out right after Seven and everyone had already seen their serial killer movie for the year. But I think the movie is very well directed by John Emil. And I think one of the great things that people like so much about it, because it's been very successful in video, et cetera, is that relationship and the fact that, we're trying to play those two very different women so honestly. You know, there's none of this sort of fake camaraderie, you know. It's also, you know, in Map of the World, I play, Alice is a best friend of Julianne Moore's character, Teresa, and there again, you have these two very opposite women who, in fact, are very close friends. And one of the things I admire about the friendship also in Map of the World is that it is not there to give exposition. You know, they often have the two women sort of talking about things and giggling, and you find out about the boyfriend or the job or the something. And it's kind of a token scene to show that this woman has someone else in her life besides the guy. But it's not really convincing. And I think the relationships in Copycat and the relationship in Map of the World are both very true. You know, they're both very honest, and women can relate to them. You know, they're not soppy sort of movie relationships.
What do you have coming up?
I have another movie coming out, I think, this spring or summer called Company Man, which is a comedy about the Bay of Pigs. And I'm in it with Woody Allen and Doug McGrath, John Turturro, Dennis Leary, and Anthony LaPaglia. And it's a crazy farce about the CIA in Cuba during the Bay of Pigs. And I play Daisy Quimp, who is obsessed with mink and actually inadvertently causes the Bay of Pigs because of her interest in mink. It's a very funny, sweet movie. And then I'm going to be working on another comedy with Jennifer Love Hewitt called The Breakers, and we play mother and daughter con artist team in Palm Beach.
Well, Sigourney Weaver, thank you so much for talking with us.
My pleasure.
Final report of the commercial starship Nostromo. Third officer reporting. The other members of the crew, Kane, Lambert, Parker, Brett, Ash, and Captain Dallas are dead. Cargo and ship destroyed. I should reach the frontier in about 6 weeks. With a little luck, the network will pick me up. This is Ripley, last survivor of the Nostromo. Signing off.
Sigourney Weaver in Alien. She's starring in two new films, A Map of the World and Galaxy Quest.